Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Detroit Lions Breakdown Podcast. I'm Gio Cagna. With me, as always, is Eric Schlitt from prideofdetroit.com. Eric, huge week for the Lions. They premiered on Hard Knocks. Huge week for you. You also premiered on Hard Knocks, wandering around in the background.
I was waiting. I know a lot of people gave me some garbage over that. Here's the way it works. Sometimes they bring two guys to a presser at a time, and sometimes they bring one. And so if they bring one guy, myself or Jeremy will go to the press comp, to the little presser, and talk to the player, and the other one will either like listen from afar if they have a player that they want to talk to. And so Jeremy was with the one player, and I was looking for someone else to talk to. And I hadn't talked to Tracy. This was day three. And so I had not touched base with Tracy yet. So I was trying to touch base with him. And that's what I was doing. I was wandering around waiting for Tracy Walker to complete his dad tasks, where he was out with his little kid running around and stuff like that. And I was just waiting for him to come in, have a conversation. But it just looked like I'm just aimlessly wandering around, not doing anything. So
was there a third cold tub? You know, they show two.
There's six.
Why couldn't you have just gotten into the third cold tub next to Hutchinson or next to one way or the other?
Yeah. You see, you can kind of see I'm kind of walking a path in the video. And what they have is they kind of ask us to stay on the path and then the building side of that path, because that's where
it's like you're at a golf tournament,
right? But they don't rope us off like Patricia did, or the like golf tournament does. Yeah, right. But so you could see a couple of people that were in like the middle, by where the logo is. Those are staff members. You can drift into that area once in a while, but if you get to the cold tub, you're a little bit out of bounds. So, I wasn't going to disturb that conversation where Aiden Hutchinson just trashes Memphis.
Well, that's you would have fit right well. You would have fit very well in the conversation, because you would have also extolled on the virtues of going to the University of Michigan.
Yeah, perpetuate that the arrogance angle of the university,
I've heard it a lot over the years. It's a real thing. All right, so we'll talk about Hard Knocks. We'll intersperse it into our discussions of the preseason game, the Lions opener in the preseason, Ford Field on Friday night, a 27-23 defeat at the hands of the Atlanta Falcons. The ending, very reminiscent of games from 2021, but that's really neither here nor there, because it's just a preseason game. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of good. There's a lot of bad. So let's talk about it position by position. Let's dig right in with the quarterbacks.
Super.
And the good, because Jared Goff in the opening series, who demanded of Coach Dan Campbell that he play in that opening series, because his offensive line was playing.
Yeah. He wasn't even feeling good. But Campbell said that wasn't why he was going to sit him. He was going to rest him, just because he rested a handful of guys. He rested like Anzalone. Hockenson had a little tweak, so he rested. You saw a handful of guys that were injured, of course, and then a couple of veterans got scaled back or didn't play at all. And that was the plan. That was a plan for Goff. He wasn't going to play. And then he saw that the rest of the starters were. And so I think it was like a smart move on his part to stay in the I lead by example type of mode and asked to play. And then, boy, you could tell the difference between him and the next guy, right?
Right. Goff played one series, engineered a 10 plays, 79-yard touchdown drive, made it look real easy along the way. He only threw four passes. Three of them were complete, and the fourth one should have been complete.
Yeah.
Jamal Williams got his hand on it. It's preseason. But he looked good. Ball didn't go downfield. Not a surprise. Playing a very vanilla offense. But he was in there. He calm, cool, collected, made it look easy.
And that's kind of what we've seen in camp, except we've seen him push outside a little bit more. And I think if they, when it gets to a point where he's going to play more than one series, you're going to see him start to lean on his outside guys a little bit more. He just didn't need to. And we'll get to why he didn't need to in a little bit, but he looked good. I mean, he looked as in command as I think he has in recent memory. You got to remember, he was not even close to where he is now a year ago. And even during the season, he didn't look as good as he did just in that one drive and how he's looked the last, couple weeks at camp. So encouraging signs that he can be a average to above average quarterback that can, keep you in games. I don't know if he's still in that spot where he's going to be able to win you games all the time, but he looked good, and he is clearly the guy, and he is in a leadership role, and that's what you want from the a player at that position.
All right. So after that, we saw the competition between Tim Boyle and David Blough. There's a mixed bag and all that. 30 seconds left in the first quarter. Tim Boyle came in with the second unit offense. He went 9-16, 111 yards, one touchdown, one interception. Touchdown was a great pass to Devin Funchess.
Sure. He had a couple of really good passes. That 45 yarder to Khalif Raymond was really good. He threw one over the middle to Benson. That was really good. But intermixed in that was a wide open Khalif Raymond that he threw the ball behind him and it got broken up. A couple of bad misses. Very helter skelter, up and down, all over. Like he flashed a couple really incredible throws and then a couple that just looked like he didn't belong in the league in any capacity, right? So the troubling thing for me was what we've seen in camp pretty much consistently through the first 2.5 weeks of practices was whoever was with the second team typically looked like the better quarterback. Right. And they've been rotating these guys through, and whoever's with the second team has always looked better. And this was actually David Blough's turn in the rotation with the second team, but they put Boyle in. Now it makes sense that they put Boyle in because they had Blough with the second team at the scrimmage the week prior. Right. And so I kind of anticipated they might go with Boyle here. But he should have looked better, and he should have looked more consistent, he did not meet the expectations, even the minimal expectations that I had for a backup quarterback. I was too just off his mark, and he missed too many, and that's becoming more representative of the type of quarterback he's been since his time in Detroit, as opposed to being a guy
fantastic who he was in Green Bay.
Oh geez, yeah, he could kneel down with everybody, right? He
in practice, he was the NFL MVP in practice.
Yeah, that's what they say. But like, you know what? I've never seen that in practice. And look, he has flashed really good talent. Like a couple of those throws were really, really nice. It's just too inconsistent, and that's the thing that's scary. And so you can see the appeal of wanting to keep Boyle from a coaching staff perspective, because they're like, look, Boyle is the more talented of the two quarterbacks. But at the same time, David Blough is the more consistent, he's more mobile when you know, he's more key plays alive. There's just a lot more that he showed, even with the third team, than what I thought Boyle showed with the second team. And so for me, I walked away saying I thought Blough was the better quarterback that night. And look, he fumbled late and
did a couple of costly mistakes.
I don't think he was ready for that snap. I couldn't quite tell. I haven't gotten to that fumble in my rewatch. I just ran out of time doing dad stuff, but live, it looked like he wasn't quite ready for it, and he was kind of reacting. And then immediately after he fumbled it, he went to McCollum and tapped McCollum on the head. And so I was like, did McCollum like snap it early? Was it late? I just haven't had a chance to figure out exactly what happened there. But I thought Blough looked really good right up until that play. And then that play, unfortunately, sets up what eventually is the meaningless game winner. Right. So Yeah. I mean, do you see things a little different than I did, or?
No, I agree with you. Blau and mop up duty. I should note 18 to 28, 141 yards passing, no touchdowns, no interceptions, costly turnover. Yeah. He's got intangibles. Yeah. He doesn't have a super strong arm. It's interesting backup quarterback competition. If Goff gets hurt, the Lions are done.
I was going to say, here's the thing with me. And when I'm looking at this quarterback competition, I think that there's in other intangibles off the field that Blau brings over Boyle. I think he's a better scout team quarterback. I think he's better in the film room. I think he's a little bit more intelligent from a football perspective, right? He has a little bit more experience. And so if their play on the field is equal, I do think Blau brings a little bit more to the table. And if Blau's playing a little bit better, Andy brings a little bit more off the field. That's why I think Blau's going to be slightly ahead for me. Now, I don't know if the coaches feel that way. They put in Boyle number two for a reason, right? But right now I'm tipping my hat to Blau.
Conversely, Falcons draft pick Desmond Ridder, 10 of 22, so under 50% passing, 103 yards, two touchdowns, with the game winner coming very late to former Ferris State quarterback, I believe Harlan Hill Trophy winner, former lacrosse player Jared Bernhardt, for the game winner against Cedric Boswell. Mm-hmm. Also had six carries, 59 yards. He looked pretty good, and he's a guy that you and I both liked and wanted to see the Lions draft. So although he was helped to make look good by the simple fact that the Lions let him scramble, they weren't really prepared for what the Falcons were going to do, which isn't a surprise for a preseason game like this.
They're not scouting the Falcons as much as they're just scouting themselves. So they didn't really game plan to beat the Falcons. If they did, you might have seen a slight adjustment in dealing with how to adjust to a mobile quarterback. But they didn't – in the preseason, you don't game plan for the Falcons. You just game plan to execute what you want to do.
It'll be interesting to see Ridder going forward. All right, moving to the running back group. David Blau led the Lions in rushing, by the way, four carries, 22 yards, 5.5 yards a clip. He made a couple of good decisions when he used his feet. DeAndre Swift, looked great in that opening drive, the nine-yard touchdown run on the draw play. The left side, we'll get to the offensive line in a second, but I'd say that was the most poorly blocked play of the series, and didn't matter. They got a touchdown at the end. Jamar Jefferson, 9 carries, 19 yards, paltry 2.1 average. Craig Reynolds, 3 for 13. Jamal Williams, 2 for 12 with that dropped reception on the opening drive. Justin Jackson, 3 for 11. Godwin Igbubukwe, 3 for 4. Reynolds also caught a couple of passes. Jamar did as well. So what did you think out of that group? They're really – Swift is going to be the guy. He's fine. Yeah. Williams is going to be the backup, or he's going to be the 1B, however you want to look at it. The other guys, nobody really showed too much.
No, Craig Reynolds has been the number three clearly all through camp. He got the number three spot. He came out with the second team. He did not look as sharp as I was anticipating him looking. And again, when we talk about the offensive line, that'll factor in a little bit. But Craig just didn't look quite as good as I was anticipating. And then once you got past Craig Reynolds, then it was, okay, who's going to be next? Is it going to be Godwin or is it going to be our Jamar? And then it was Jamar, and it was Jamar a big dose of Jamar. And Godwin actually didn't even come into the game until the fourth quarter. And then when he came in, he platooned with Justin Jackson. So it clearly put Jamar ahead on the running back depth chart. Now the when it comes to making decisions for the 53, if Godwin ends up playing on special teams like we anticipate, which he's been taking first team reps all camp but didn't in the game, I still think Godwin might get the edge because of special teams. When you're talking about the fourth running back, special teams is going to be a big factor. But from an offensive perspective, they do seem to prefer Jefferson. And, he looks like he's still getting, he's still kind of working his way through some things. I think the talent is there. You can see it. The consistency isn't quite as there. And I think that's one of the things that makes him vulnerable. you know, to maybe not make the roster in favor of a guy like Godwin, who is, you know, potentially the starting kick returner. Now, the fact that Godwin wasn't the starting kick returner could have been that they just wanted to give an opportunity to Trinity Benson to get a look, or maybe it was, you know, they didn't like something about what Godwin has done. But here's the thing. All camp, Godwin has been the first kick returner every single time they run a kick return drill. So I don't think it was anything to do with Godwin. I think it was just, hey, we want to create an opportunity for Trinity Benson. They did the same thing in the punts. And we'll get to that in a minute as well. So I still think when it comes to the 53, Godwin has a slight edge because of special teams. And Jackson, that's kind of what he's been doing. Not a whole lot. He's been near the end of the rotation. Hasn't really done enough to flash above one of the guys above him. I know he's a veteran that people like, and, but he's just, I don't see it quite yet from him. Maybe as the preseason rolls on, we'll see a little bit more, but right now the order looks pretty clear to me, with Swift, Williams, Reynolds, Jefferson, Igwebukwe, and then Jackson at the end.
No real surprises.
Just the order in which they went in at RB4. That was really the only unknown, but not a surprise still.
Speaking of players that really didn't surprise us on Friday, receiving core, Tom Kennedy leading the way. 8 receptions, 104 yards, dominant in the game. Devin Gardner, if you were watching the TV version, just going on about how, you know, Tom Kennedy's the guy, extremely consistent, reliable, and that's sure. the guy you're going to throw to.
Mr. Reliable.
Lions had 30 completions in the game, 13 different receivers. So there's a bit to talk about here.
And ironically, neither Chark nor Reynolds caught a ball, right, as you're starting outside guys. So
Amon-Ra St. Brown was very crisp in that opening drive.
Had 2 catches, 2 first downs, right?
Then the pass to Brock Wright, the 18-yarder.
Yep. So that was a smart play by Goff.
Right? The outside receivers were not needed in that opening drive.
No, but it shows you, as a fan watching, the threat of those outside guys, how much that just opens up the middle. Right. I mean, we saw St. Brown, Brock, right? Like every time they went to the middle, it was a first down. And so that is the threat of having a DJ Chark on the outside. And when Jameson comes back, we'll see how that thing, you know, opens up even more.
That's going to be the big question is right. How are they going to push the ball downfield?
Right. Well, you know, it's going to come. They didn't need to. It was just one drive.
And right. Well, drive, he was just, Goff was just taking what was given to him. Yeah.
But yeah, you know, after you're starting 3, you know, Khalif was your number 4. He looked pretty good. He made a couple of nice plays. Excuse me. He was open quite a bit. And Boyle, like I said earlier, Boyle missed him a couple of times. I thought Khalif looked fine. Benson, of course, is with the 2s. That's where he's been. This is his opportunity to secure that spot. But Benson is being threatened by Tom Kennedy, and it's Tom Kennedy's reliability and consistency and that the coaches trust that is giving him the opportunity to go. Now, after that, you've got guys with some talent in, like, you know, Maurice Alexander shows more than what I thought he was going to have when he joined the team. Pimpleton, I think he's kind of stuck behind the St. Brown Raymond Kennedy logjam there. That's going to make things hard for him. I thought he looked okay as well. You can tell he's shifty, but the real story here is they're giving an opportunity to Trinity Benson versus the reliability of Tom Kennedy. And I know a lot of people are gung-ho on the Tom Kennedy should make the roster train. I mean, they are gone. Right? But here's the deal for me. We're talking about probably wide receiver 6, right? Because when Quintez comes back, Quintez has looked better. I assume I'm going to put Quintez in as like wide receiver 5 for me. So when you look at Kennedy versus Benson, they're trying to get Trinity Benson different snaps. Now, he played in all 4 phases of special teams. He has specific roles that he starts on in special teams, and then they're trying him out at other spots. And when he doesn't start at that spot. Like, for example, a kick returner. They tried him out at kick returner. If he doesn't start at kick returner, he still has another role on that kick return unit. So he, like, he can play all four phases. Tom Kennedy didn't play a single special team snap that game at all. And he really has that. He's just not very good at it. It's always kind of been his Achilles heel for most of his career. And it doesn't make sense because he has that mentality. It's just, for whatever reason, he's never really found success at it. And they've tried different ways to get him involved in it, and it just hasn't really worked. And so, like RB4, when you're looking at wide receiver six, you're looking at, do I like the guy who has more potential to be an offensive threat? Or do I like the guy who can contribute on offense, but is also has a specific key role on multiple special teams units? And right now that's Benson. And I know Benson didn't look nearly as good as Tom Kennedy, but in an actual game scenario, wide receiver six is not going to get that many snaps, right? He might get eight snaps a game. Maybe. Whereas Benson, he might get 28 special team snaps. And that's going to be extremely important when you're talking about that last wide receiver six spot. Like, if they end up giving the six spot to Tom Kennedy, he could be a game day inactive because he doesn't play special teams. And that's just the hard truth of it, especially five guys are ahead of him. So I do think Benson is a guy that is going to slightly be ahead because of special teams, even though Tom Kennedy is really making the decision hard because all he does, you need a third down, throw him the ball. You need to get rid of the ball quickly, throw him the ball. Like, you can do all that stuff, but there's the path for him to snaps is really limited because of the talent above him.
Right. Like, Tom Kennedy is getting every last drop of football ability out of himself. Yeah. Yeah. There's really no more room for him to grow, you know, and it, like, as you explained, with when it comes to special teams, if he can't do that, you know, and that's why it's not surprising when you get down to it that no other team has snapped him up when he's been unprotected on the practice squad over these last few years, you know, and he's a fine depth piece. And like I always, you know, but there are some moments where I talk about certain players that I've commanded that they'll be in the starting lineup sometime this season as they're buried in the practice squad.
Yeah.
Tom Kennedy's probably one of those guys, but I could be wrong, but we saw him a ton last year, you know, as injuries mounted. Sure. And that's, I think that's Tom Kennedy's destiny, is to end up on that practice squad and be spelling wide receivers as they get hurt.
Yeah. Look, I think you nailed it with the fact that no one has really gone after and claimed him. Because I know people really like him, and I know this city loves to attach themselves to underdogs, but there's got to be a little bit more. And that's the sad truth of how the rosters are constructed. If you're just taking the best six wide receivers, then Kennedy's going to be in that group, but it unfortunately doesn't work like that.
All right, moving on to the, before we move on.
Yeah.
That wide receiver group, no shockers. Nothing shocking happened with that wide receiver group. They probably play the only thing would be the guys down the depth chart played a little bit better than I would have expected.
But it's a better group. It's a better group all around, I think. Even the depth guys are a little bit better than they were last year, or they're better than the depth guys that were there. Yeah, a little bit better. Hey, do you want to talk about the fact that Jameson's changed his number?
Yeah, we can. To me, this is not the biggest deal. He switched to number 9, Matthew Stafford's old number. He texted Matthew. Now, from what I understand, and you correct me if I'm wrong, he didn't text him to ask for his permission, just to tell him he was doing it, right?
Oh, I thought he asked, but I'm not clear.
I could have misread it.
So the way that the way that I understood it was he wanted to move to a single digit number, and he wanted to do that from the beginning. He's had a single digit number at Alabama. He was number one. He wanted to shift to number one when he got here, but and you also have to remember Jeff Okuda was at Ohio State with him and was ahead of him, you know, like on the depth chart and in years. And so Okuda just said, no, I'm going to hold on to it. And that's understandable. And then he probably could have tried to pry out some of the other numbers. Austin Bryant has number two, Jack Fox number three, Chark number
Jason
four.
Hansen, wouldn't number give it,
right? And then Deshaun Elliott's new guy got number five. Six is Patterson. He probably could have got six from Patterson, to be honest with you. Seven is retired.
Clark.
Yep. And then eight is Josh Reynolds, the other, you know, starting receiver. So nine was the last one. And so he said, hey, I'm not scared of it. And good for him. I, you know, whether he has permission or not, or just told him, it carries a lot of weight, that number in the city, you know, leadership on the field, leadership off the field. And to have the confidence to say that I don't care about that. I want the number. I think I can do it. He either has the right amount of confidence in himself, or maybe he just doesn't fully understand.
Too much confidence.
Exactly. Exactly. One or the other. And
is this a sacrilege to you?
No,
I know that's not the proper term.
No, but I know what you mean. Yeah. No, don't bother.
Like neither. Yeah. Same here. Like
it's going to be unusual. It's going to be unusual. But I'm it's fine.
Because it's I don't know how unusual it is. Are the Lions eventually going to retire number nine for Matthew Stafford?
Oh no!
Could it be a dual retiring for Matthew Stafford and James Williams? A little too early to say something about this. Say something like that.
Could they ring of honor him?
Number that could be.
I think.
Yeah.
They might
Well, he'll be a ring of honor guy certainly, but I don't think they'll retire number nine.
No.
Unless he wins another Super Bowl or two in Los Angeles, because then they're in that situation. Well, he's a three-time Super Bowl winner. You got to kind of retire his number, even though he didn't win any of them here.
Right.
You know, that would be a weird position for them to be in. But yeah, I don't see them retiring Stafford.
No.
He's a good player.
Yeah.
You know, one of the if you had to build a Detroit Lions all-time team, he's one of the quarterbacks. Sure. Many would argue he would be the starter.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't see them retiring the number. So I don't think it's that big of a deal that Williams is going to wear his number.
It's still fresh for some people. So, and I understand that. And then there's other people that are like, have the complete opposite approach, that are like, you know, he gave up the right to even be in this conversation. Right. Whereas I view it as it's a sign of respect, you know, to at least reach out, even if it was him just saying, hey, by the way, I'm taking your number. It's still a sign of respect to reach out and have that conversation. So it didn't bother me. I just thought it was an interesting talking point.
All right, tight ends. Here's the one position where something interesting happened on Friday night. Brock Wright, he started and he played. He had the nice 18-yard reception.
Mm-hmm.
It's no real shocker that he's the number two tight end, and he's kind of, you know, holding that number two tight end
pretty firmly. He blocked better than he did last year as well, which I think is going to go a long way for him. Him and Griffin spend a lot of time after practice working on blocking technique, and I think that's paying off, the hard work, right? And so, you know, he's putting himself in a good spot to, you know, I think really lock down that number two. And he's close, like on that first or second drive. You know, you saw Zylstra pretty early, you saw Griffin pretty early, but it was really
Them all in.
But Brock was the guy that they're like, hey, we're going to him early. And I think he showed that nice duality of versatility to be firmly at that tight end two spot for me.
Now, interesting for me, and I know you have a much different perspective on this, and we've talked about this already, because in practice, they don't use Funchess a lot, and he's seemingly way down the depth chart in practice. Then he plays on Friday. He's hurdling defenders. Everybody catches passes. Yeah. He's making great touchdown receptions. Yeah. Like, he's showing that, you know, we can now see that he knows it's the end, and he's got to do whatever it takes, you know, to hold on. But in this preseason game, has he put himself in the conversation to be the number three tight end?
I think he did. You know, it was that touchdown catch was really, really good. And yeah, look, depending on how they want to construct this, they can go a lot of different ways with the tight end room. And so I would say there are six guys in contention for three, maybe four spots, depending on what happens with Jason Kabinda. So if Jason Kabinda comes back and he's your fullback, in my opinion, they just go Hockenson, Wright, and then it's a competition between Zylstra Or, and then it's Mitchell. I'm sorry, Mitchell. And then after three. So Hawkinson, Wright, Mitchell. And then if Kambidna is ready. But if Kambidna is not ready, well, now you got to keep a guy like Garrett Griffin. And Garrett Griffin can be that H-back role, that super back. That can he can be a tight end. He can be the fullback. Then when you bring Griffin in, now adding, you know, Brock Wright to the mix with Griffin, you've got two really good blocking tight ends. And if you're keeping Mitchell and Hawkinson, then that's your four. But if Mitchell's not ready, but you're still keeping him because of his upside, and then you're like, well, I got these two blocking tight ends. I probably don't need two blocking tight ends. And if this guy's my H-back, well, then Brock Wright could end up being a little bit vulnerable. And if he ends up being vulnerable, they may go to a pass catcher like a Zylstra or Funchess. If Funchess can you know, jump Zylstra on the depth chart, which he hasn't yet. But I do think depending on what happens with Kambidna, how they want to construct the depth of that position, you could end up seeing a guy like Funchess go from tight end six to tight end like four and end up making the roster pretty quickly. At the same time, I could also see him staying being tight end six and they keep three and then he's still tight end six and that's the end of his career, you know, career in Detroit. So I could see it go a lot of different ways. I'm not ready to write him off. You know, he's still got, I think he's he'll make it through the cuts. Yeah. He'll make it through the cuts. Let me put it that way.
Easiest part of the coach's job.
Yeah. The first two waves, I think he can make it through those first two waves without issue. After that, we'll see how he goes. He'll have two more games to prove that he's better than, you know, what we've been projecting.
So you've thrown out a bunch of tight end three scenarios. Yeah. How will they be affected by special teams?
A lot, because all of them have to contribute, right? And I think they all do. And the one who is, you know, has the biggest hang up is Funchess. He's the one.
Had to play it.
Yeah, he's right. Now, that being said, his blocking is getting a little bit better, but it's still not where it needs to be. But that's, you know, to be expected. Zylstra's isn't where it needs to be either. And again, that's to be expected. For these pass catching tight ends, they're going to have to contribute on special teams, but, you know, they just don't bring to the table what a guy like guys like Wright and Griffin do. Wright and Griffin, those guys, they can contribute in a lot of different ways. And, you know, Griffin's got a lot of that H-back versatility, but, you know, I do think he's behind Brock Wright. And if for some reason they think Brock Wright can pull off H-back while Kambidna, you know, isn't ready, that could be bad news for Griffin as well, because I do think they want to keep a tight end who is ready to be a pass catcher besides Hawkinson. And, you know, that could be right too, I guess, right? Like we saw that 18 yarder. So I do think there's a lot unsettled. There's a lot more unsettled at this position. And, you know, we didn't get to see James Mitchell, but.
Yeah, that was going to, like, you're still pretty high on him from what you've already discussed. Yeah. I was going to ask, by not seeing him, is that hurting him? I would guess it's not, since they spent a pretty high chunk of draft capital on him, that he's going to be around in some fashion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're not rushing him. You know what I mean? Like, if they thought he was on the bubble, they might have pushed him a little bit to play. We've seen that in the past from when they've had players who were on the bubble and injured, and they would said, hey, you probably got to try and gut something out here. They didn't even try with him, with Mitchell. They were like, all right, you know what? You're ready to, we're going to rest you. We don't want to risk it. You're part of our long-term vision. And he's shown good versatility. He's a better blocker, I think, than what he gets credit for. He has some he's got that pass catching potential. I think sooner, you know, potentially even by the end of the year, he could be tight end too. And I think they see that as well. And so, I feel pretty confident that he's going to be one of the tight ends on the roster.
All right. We're going to round out the offense with the offensive line, starting with that first unit, which was absolutely dominant. In that opening series, they had one crummy run play to the right side behind Sewell. But other than that, they showed they could run right, they can run left, they can run draws, they can protect and give Goff all the time in the world. But it's still, it's just the first preseason game.
Yeah, they, I mean, they, when you go back and watch just them, they were throwing some people around at different points. Like, that run to the left that Swift had that really gained like, I don't know, like 7 or 9 yards or something like that. Like Jonah Jackson was like, he took his guy and ran him, put him on skates and ran him back like 10 yards and then put him on the, in the ground. You know, Decker is very, he's just very much a technician in how he's just walls people off. He just gets his body in the spots that he needs to be in and he goes. Whereas Vaitai, I thought Vaitai was, I mean, he landed on people a couple of times. Once he fell down once and caused a little client, you know, a little pileup, but he was winning way more than he was losing. And then Sewell's just a monster. I mean, you could still just scratching the surface of where he can go as a player overall. And, you know, Goff had plenty of time in the pocket. They kept things very clean for him. They weren't, you know, fooled by any alterations or changeups or pass offs that they had to do. They basically just kept everything, you know, right in front of them, and they gave him time to throw. And then when it was time to run, they moved people around. And, you know, there's still a little bit that can be cleaned up in the run game, which is to be expected, right? Because they don't run a whole lot in the training camp, because they're only in pads a couple of times. But yeah, they definitely were beating people up. I was only 10 plays, but it was an impressive 10 plays.
Well, it was good to see that they're, although probably all scripted, they were all ready to go with these 10 plays. They're showing that they mean business. They're not screwing around, which is a good sign going forward. Now, when you go to the second group, on the other hand, they didn't look so great. And the weird thing is, and it's something we saw all last year, Matt Nelson, who's like a duck in water when they throw him out there to be the sick. You know, when he's playing out on that edge. But when he comes in to play a regular offensive tackle spot, he struggles. You know, it's a very odd thing to see.
It is. And I think some of it is he's just not as comfortable in pass pro as you expect him to be, right? When he's in that sixth offensive lineman role, he's usually
run plays.
It's usually going after people. He was one of my downs. He was one of my stock down guys. And it was very easy for me to put him as a stock down, because he looked, you know, like a duck stuck in the mud. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It was a very noticeable difference. He got penalized for a hold when he got beat around the edge. It wasn't terrible. I mean, you think if he would have his hand placement a little bit different, he might not have got called for that. But it was not great. I didn't think he was great in the run game. I didn't think he was good in the pass game. And so that was a bit of a downer for me, because I had some high hopes for him.
Second and third group in general had struggled to run the ball.
You know, what I really liked was Tommy Kramer, because when I started looking at Nelson, I was looking at Tommy Kramer next to him as well. And I thought Tommy Kramer did well. I thought Tommy Kramer's pass blocking was really, really improved. Right. We've seen him do well in the run game in the past. I just thought his pass pro was on point. And so, for me, looking at that battle between Tommy Kramer and Logan Stenberg, I definitely am sticking with Kramer. I mean, he's got right tackle versatility, right guard. He's taken snaps at center. He's played left guard, whereas Stenberg has really just played the guard spots, and Stenberg really hasn't done much to impress me. You know, he was all right. Nothing stood out about him, I guess, is what it is. Whereas Kramer, I was more noticeably impressed by him. I thought Evan Brown looked steady. And then there was on the other side was Dan Skipper. And Skipper, I don't know.
He's Dan Skipper. Yeah. I think they've developed him as far as it can be developed. And
he's, certainly.
You know, he's average, a little below average, probably mediocre. You know, but he's not a bad guy to have in the organization. He's passable when they have to throw him out there, when there's a lot of injuries. So You know, but I think, I don't know if we're going to see a lot more out of Dan Skipper. Like, yeah, he is what he is, it seems.
And like, if you're looking at Dan Skipper to challenge like Matt Nelson for that OT3 role, I wasn't seeing it. And yes, mm-hmm. they did flip Skipper to right at one point in the game with like the third, like when they shifted up into the third unit, they put Skipper onto the right side. And I thought, okay, maybe they're giving him looks to try and challenge Matt Nelson. I didn't see it. I didn't see enough out of him. I didn't see enough out of Nelson. I thought Obina was up and down. Lamb was okay. He's going to be a
practice squad stash guy, I think.
Yeah, I talked to him after the game. He basically said that he's played left tackle almost his whole career. He does have some experience at right tackle, but he's basically trying to work on just getting that muscle memory at right tackle. And that's what's, you know, and you could see that. You can see that he's a guy who's trying to develop right tackle skills. He's got a lot of the same hiccups that Sewell had last year early in camp. And so for me, yeah, Obina's probably a practice squad guy that you're going to develop, and he could have a bright future, but he's got some developmental arc to get through before he can get to that spot. Now, the only other guy that really jumped out to me, and you're going to love it, Kevin Jarvis. I thought Jarvis looked pretty good.
It's shocking.
I thought Jarvis looked better than Stenberg.
Well, and that's been the story, you know, in training camp as well, right? That right. Jarvis has looked good. They've mixed him right. in there. He does have positional versatility. We saw that at Michigan State. He played all over the line. So he's already has that mindset to be flexible. And yeah, in he camp, didn't play bad on Friday.
In camp, he's played left guard, right guard, and right tackle in camp. And then in the game, I think he just played
right guard.
Only played right guard. I can double check that to be certain, but yeah, I'm pretty sure it was only right guard. Yeah. Only right guard. But
it's shocking.
I thought he looked good. And again, when you're putting him next to like Dan Skipper, who's not really playing great, and Obina, who was up and down, he looked better. And it was eerily like Tommy Kramer, where, maybe he just looked that much better because the tackle next to him was not doing so hot. But I thought he was solid. And for me, he's a guy you have to keep tabs on because he could end up sneaking in and end up making the practice squad and could be a guy who gets promoted later in the year, kind of like
Tommy Kramer.
Yeah, exactly. Kind of like what we saw out of Tommy Kramer. So I see a similar path from these two guys, and I like both of them. I thought right now – he could be my ninth offensive lineman that I like right now based on that game and kind of what I've seen in practice. Now he's still with the third unit, but he might be the ninth best offensive lineman on the team right now. And that's probably not something I thought going into training camp.
All right, let's flip over to the defensive side of the ball.
Mm-hmm.
We'll go straight up. We'll talk about the defensive line because, you know, when, you know, we always start with the quarterback. It's going to seem that this has to turn into where we have to start with Aiden Hutchinson. he started at left end, but he would flip over to right end depending on where the strong side of the formation was. He made a very nice play on his second play of his career where he slipped inside of Jake Matthews. Made a nice play in the backfield.
Yeah, former number 6 overall pick, Jake Matthews.
No, and from the first family of offensive linemen. Yes. Or, well, I don't know, I guess players with great longevity.
The Matthews
a lot of football
for
lineage
sure.
he beat there. So that's a great sign that he's making plays. He's going to be a guy who can make plays, and that's something I've certainly been concerned about when they talk about, well, he's a high floor guy. It's like, well, no, we need a high ceiling out of him too. Yeah. He did struggle. When they moved him inside on those third and long plays, he kind of got swallowed up by those offensive guards when they were playing him inside.
Yep.
Something, you know, that he's probably going to have to develop into.
Yeah, and there's times that he's really, really flashed from there as well. But you got to remember, he's only like 265 pounds, right? So yeah, there's going to be times that that's just the nature of, you know, when you're giving up 40, 50 pounds to one of these guys, if it's, it's such tight quarters on the interior there that if he doesn't make that initial first move, it gets a little bit harder for him to power his way through. And so, but yeah, I mean, look, he Olayed Jake Matthews. I mean, Matthews didn't even touch him. Like, that was right. as perfect a technical execution as you could ask for. Couple plays later, you know, like even the first play where he crashes down and then stops and adjusts and peels off and then get the Mariota then scrambles. And then Deshaun Elliott comes low and Hutchinson hits him high and knocks Mariota out of bounds. Like on that first play, like even that, that adjustment from a defensive end to be able to put his foot in the ground and then go chase the quarterback to the sideline isn't something that you've seen out of defensive ends in the past. And so, and he did it a couple of times. He did the other time he did it, Chris Lindstrom held him. And so that's another first round pick at right guard who grabbed a hold of him. And when Hutchinson tried to peel away, he grabbed him and held him, and he drew that penalty. And so, yeah, I mean, he's going to be like Sewell in the way that it doesn't matter who you line him up across from, he's still going to make his plays. And I think he was he was PFF's highest graded edge rusher.
Rookie defender. Oh, edge rusher, period.
Edge rusher, period. I thought. I have to double check to me, but he was definitely the highest rated rookie.
He's not the highest rated rookie defender, because the highest rated rookie defender, isn't he also on the Lions? But we'll get to him later.
Well, yeah.
But anyhow, the one thing, the great big positive to see out of Hutchinson, I would say, maybe you agree, disagree, his development at this point is ahead of where Sewell was at this point last year.
Yeah.
Sewell had a year off, though, too, at the same
time. And he was switching sides. Yeah. Yeah, certainly I would say he's ahead. Yeah, I would agree with that for sure.
Rest of the defensive line. Now, we did see them. They are quicker. They're getting up the field. Yeah. We're seeing a lot of penetration, but it didn't work out for them on Friday. Now, and a lot of people are going to put that on.
Sure.
That they weren't game planning for the Falcons. They weren't spying the quarterback. They weren't trying to contain the quarterback. They gave up 82 yards rushing between Mariota and Ritter. And so, you know, they had no sacks. Like some people look and say, well, defensive line much better. And other people looks like, well, they were just working on getting up the field. They really weren't trying to defend certain plays.
Yeah. Outside of Hutchinson, most of the pressure came when they blitzed like linebackers, or if they brought linebackers like in a third down package. Right. I don't think really any of the other linebacker, the other edge rushers really stood out beyond Hutchinson. Now, Comiskey
had a couple nice plays late in the game.
Yeah.
There's third against third stringers, but he executed.
Correct. And he was in that Hutchinson role, right? He's in that I'm going to play both sides and kick in as well. And I think like right now with Pascal being out, Comiskey is a very natural positional replacement for him. And I think that's going to be an inside track for him to potentially get to the roster. Charles Harris disappointed me a little bit. I thought he would play a little bit better than he did, but again, you know, he only played like what, 10 or 13 snaps or something like that. So it wasn't much. You can't get on him too bad for that. He's been terrific in camp. I thought Austin Bryant made a couple of really nice moves, struggled to finish. If he could connect those dots, I think that'll look a little bit better for him. No Julian. I thought James Houston got washed a little bit too easily, but again, you can kind of expect that at his size. Yep. That, you know, it comes with it. And Banks didn't really stand out. He had a great, I mean, his, how he played in the Lions scrimmage was the best I've ever seen him play. And then he kind of faded back to normal here. So, Hutchinson and Comiskey were the guys that I thought, you know, did themselves favors. And the other guys showed that, you know, there's still some work to do on the edge.
We saw Isaiah Buggs for the first time in a Lions uniform. Tom Spell, McNeil. It wasn't bad.
No,
you know, I was interested to see how he would play.
He's not flashy, you know, at all.
Right.
Right. Yep. Like, but it's
we're talking 300-pound guy.
Yeah, backup nose tackle, right?
Yeah.
You know, I think he missed a tackle or two, right? I think he missed one that I can remember. But he looked fine, you know. I thought that the rest of the interior defensive line struggled. Brockers didn't look great. Cornell, Cornell really didn't look as good as he has in camp. That was, he took a big step back. And for a guy that is expected to, you know, take over for Levi and take those like Levi reps as like DT3, I thought that was a problem, problem game for him. Hopefully you can see him get a little bit of a rebound. Like I said, Bug, like you said, Bugs looked okay. I didn't see a ton out of Hector. He looked average. I thought Demetrius Taylor showed a nice first step. The problem with Demetrius is he only played like what, 10 snaps at the, in the, at the end of the fourth quarter. And so it's really hard to ascertain what he can do because he just didn't get the opportunities earlier. Now, because he did flash a little bit late in the game, is it possible that he earned some reps a little bit earlier? I think that combined with some of the earlier guys struggling, yeah, I think Demetrius could get a little bit of love and move up a little bit. But yeah, the interior left you wanting more. That's for certain.
That's all about there is to say on the defensive line. Yeah. It's a lot. The defense compared to the offense, defense is a lot sadder of a story from you know, Friday. Yeah. And it's not surprising. We were kind of expecting that. And coming off of last year, you know, it was a very bad defense. And there is some improvements being made. And there's a lot of young players that are going to need to develop. Speaking of that, let's go to the linebacker group that did look very poor on Friday. We got a start, though, out of fan favorite, Malcolm, great dancer, Malcolm Rodriguez.
Yeah.
Maybe the dancing helped him start. I don't know.
You know, he delivers a hit right on special teams, right? And then he celebrates and then just rolls
when he made that he made that play on special teams, and then he's staying out on the field. He's not running to the sidelines.
Right. Like
he's milling around. He's waiting for the huddle to, and I'm like, wow, they're going to start him.
And I think that really shows he's more in the mix. Over this last week, he's really been in the top four mix. Like we've talked most of the offseason about how Board, Anzalone, and Barnes have been like the top three guys, and two of those three guys are going to start. Rodriguez is now in that mix, and now it's a four-man race. And I think they showed that by letting him go out there and start over Chris Board. And so Barnes.
Yeah, he's missing assignments, and you know, very Davis is now on the team, very Davis like.
Yeah, he's got
still developing, though. It's not over for him yet.
The hard part is he's missing his reads right now. Lots of athleticism, lots of ability to cover. He had a really nice tackle for loss. He missed a tackle in the gap that against the first team. He guessed the wrong gap. He needed to get on that sweep right where the Falcons went to the right, and he tried to undercut the tackle, thinking his athleticism or the center to thinking his athleticism could get him to the ball carrier. It didn't work. His job was to get on top on the front side of that center and try and push that play back, and it didn't work. And that was, they got gashed huge. And it looked like, it wasn't just like where he was missing. It was when he was missing, because he was missing on like critical downs. And so I thought Barnes, he had more, he left a lot on the table. He was a guy who I was one of my higher up, like stock down guys. I thought he could have shown a little bit more. It wouldn't surprise me to see a Rodriguez Board starting combo against Indy, because I thought Rodriguez played a little bit better. I talked to Malcolm after the game. He said that Kelvin Shepard said that Rodriguez didn't miss any assignments, and that was important for them. Now, when they go back and watch film, could he have uncovered a missed assignment? Maybe. But watching live, they thought Malcolm did exactly what they wanted Malcolm to do. And so I think that's a feather in his cap. And you know, I thought he did well in the opportunities that were there, and he only played like 20 snaps, but still he did well in those 20 snaps. And the future is very bright for him. It's crazy. Like, cause like we were jokingly talking about how, like, how he could be in the mix, and then, you know, he's probably not going to be, so don't get too hyped up. And now all of a sudden the hype is real. And now he's firmly in that mix. And it's because he's earned it. And so it's a good thing for Malcolm Rodriguez. And if he can play better, it could be a good thing for the Lions as well. I thought Board underwhelmed a little bit. Like I said, we didn't see Anzalone. Jared Davis, he had a couple really nice plays, and then a couple not so nice plays.
Classic Jared Davis.
Yeah. I was surprised.
Sean Dion Hamilton.
Yeah, I was surprised that Sean Dion Hamilton was so late into the game.
Yeah, they weren't using him till very late.
Yeah, he showed up the last play of the third quarter. That was the first time I saw him. And that, for me, you had seen everybody else except him. You know what I mean? Like, you had even seen Josh Woods. And I thought Josh Woods popped a little bit. He had some bad moments as well. But I thought he did well. He did well in areas that I think were not his greatest skill set. For example, early in the game for him, he caught up in a wash, and an offensive lineman got him, and then he just couldn't do anything about it. But then later, you could see he started to like a little bit more patience, a little bit more correct decision making and how he wanted to be aggressive against the run. I thought he played a little bit better as it went on, but it was still kind of an up and down day for most of the unit. I liked Malcolm the best, and the linebacker play late was better, but again, you know, against the third string,
it's all third stringers. Who knows what it means? Who knows what it means?
Not a lot, in all honesty. And so, yeah, so up the middle.
Go ahead.
I was going to say up the middle, defensive tackles, and linebackers. That was the area we were worried about being problematic, and that was the area that was problematic.
Nothing's changed.
Yeah.
One thing about Rodriguez that's a big positive for Holmes, you know, when you look at the previous regimes of this franchise, here's a sixth round draft pick. Mm-hmm. That they threw out there first play of the game, and he showed immediately that he can play in the NFL. You know, like, that's a rarity for the Lions, at least recently, you know, and that's a very good thing to see. How good is Malcolm Rodriguez going to be? Who knows? He might not be very, in the end, he could be a starter and a solid player for this team. He might end up just being, you know, a pretty decent special teamer and a guy you can throw out there and rely on defense. But it's very good. It looks very good this early that here's a guy that they drafted late that can be used in games. Mm-hmm. Like, he's not going to be on the practice squad. He's going to be on the main squad and contributing.
And then to extrapolate,
doesn't that end out, there either.
No.
Cause we're going to talk about that in a minute.
And I think if you extrapolate that out, it also shows like free agents, hey, we're going to play the best player. It doesn't matter where you were picked. It doesn't matter what we signed you for. If you come in and you win the job, we're going to give you the job, you know, even if you're starting camp as the fourth string guy, by game one, you could be starting. And that's the Malcolm Rodriguez story in a nutshell right there.
All right, let's go back, moving to the defensive backfield. Now, I would say coming out of last year that the defensive backs, that was probably the best position group of the defense at the end of the year, but it wasn't by much over the other two position groups. And on Friday, they looked still the best position group, but it's even a little bit more. They're a little bit better. They're making tiny steps forward, it looks like.
Yeah, I agree with that.
The starters, we saw Jeff Okuda start. I don't know how big of a deal that is. They had Will Harris's star. Jeff Okuda's out there for the first play of the game.
Yeah, that was a strange. I was wondering if Will got hurt or something. That was the first thing that we were thinking of was, you know, why did they switch out so quickly? But, you know, I thought Jeff played well. He had a couple of really nice run stops. You know, he gave up one reception on kind of that like crosser. in the red zone. But I mean, in all honesty, the way that they would normally run that play is they would pass their guys off. And the slot guy didn't pass the guy off. He stuck with him. And so then Jeff had to basically stay in a trail position. And it would have been a really hard play for him to make. I don't know if that was miscommunication between him and, like, I think it was Parker. If it was miscommunication between the pair I don't want to put that on Parker, but somebody, I thought they might've switched when that play was happening, because the receivers ran like essentially crossing routes, and they sometimes would pass those players off in that split zone. So he ended up in a trail position. That was a hard spot, but he made some good tackles, and I thought he looked a little bit better. And Amani gave up a play early, but I thought he looked okay. And Bobby Price is going to get a little bit of dinged for a couple plays that he missed, but you know, he's not going to get credit for the interception in the box score, but that was a good interception, and the coaches are going to recognize that as a positive play for him, right? So I thought Bobby did better as a corner than what we had kind of anticipated. So like, if your guys are Will Harris and Akuda and Oarie, and you're still looking for that corner four, and you're looking at, you know, Mike Hughes, Mark Gilbert, Bobby Price, I like Bobby, even though like your PFF scores might not say it. I thought Bobby was the one who looked like the better of that trio. And so for me, that was a nice little stock up for him, because I'm going to give him credit for that interception. It's not his fault. He made the play. It's not his fault. Mm-hmm. There was another penalty, right?
Right.
The Jared Goff or Jared Davis was pushed in or whatever happened there. I don't know. It was hard to see live. But the replay kind of showed like he got bumped into him or something. It was kind of a bad call from what I understand.
Yeah, well, they make those calls.
Watching live though, I was very troubled by AJ Parker. He's done well. He's added weight, and he says that he had about 10 pounds of weight, because remember last year he got injured a couple of times. So he added 10 pounds of weight, and he said that he's can carry it now and that it's a non-issue. I don't know if he can. He looked like he was a little bit late on things. Get a really nice penetration and then misses the tackle in the backfield. He could have got a TFL but he missed it. There was a couple of plays that Parker didn't make, especially against the run, that he has made in the past, that left me wanting more out of Parker. Now he's still their clear nickelback preferred guy. And then they went to Mike Hughes, and Hughes, you know, he's a better cover guy than he is against like a run stuffer, whereas AJ kind of gives you that duality. And they went to Mike Hughes a lot, and he looked okay. Again, I'm not overwhelmed by Mike Hughes. I think he's fine, but he doesn't like necessarily stand out to me. And then at the end of the game, we got to see Chase Lucas in the slot for a whole
PFF's.
For a whole six snaps.
Yeah, PFF's number one graded defensive rookie from this past weekend.
91.
You like him? Six snaps.
Oh God! And he makes two big plays. I talked to him in the locker room after as well, and he was pretty disappointed he did not bring that
get out there earlier.
Well, I went up to him and introduced myself, and I was like, man, I was a little disappointed you didn't get out there earlier. And he was like, yeah, me too. And I was like, but hey, look, you made the most of your opportunities. You made a really nice tackle. And if you watch those two plays that he made, the tackle and the PBU, those are like pitcher perfect plays. You watch him in the slot, line up over his guy, pass a guy off, drift into a zone, recognize what's happening in front of him, close on the ball, make the play, and an instant tackle. And then, you know, gets his hands on the ball and could have like ended the game essentially. But you know, he's, that's kind of his, how he's been. He's like this close to turning a corner. He's like, just, he can make the PBU when he's this close to making the interception. And for a seventh round rookie, he's way further along than where I think most seventh round rookies would be. And when he does turn that corner, he's going to be great. And he's just right on that cusp for me. PFF, yeah, loved him. PFF loved his coverage. PFF loved, you know, everything about his six plays that he did. I loved everything about his six plays that he did. And I really hope that he gets a better opportunity for more snaps, you know, in the next game, because he is a just high ceiling guy for me. Man, I love everything about his game. I know I gush about him like every time we talk here, but I thought he was fantastic. And so, yeah, I agree with you. I think the corners were better overall. It was harder, I think, on them because the front still wasn't doing everything that they needed to do.
Much pressure, yeah.
And you know, some of that will come when you get healthier and you get, you know, get Anzalone out there, to who is really like that captain of the defense.
Yeah, he's not great,
settle things down.
Yeah, he'll solidify things a little bit.
Yeah, and so you add a couple of those things in, and maybe that helps your front seven a little bit more, and then in turn helps your back seven a little bit more as well. I thought the safeties looked better too. I thought Trace looked solid. I thought Elliot looked solid. Elliot came up, made a bunt, two or three really nice tackles on that opening drive. Kirby's got dinged by PFF, if I recall.
Played late though too. I thought they were bringing brought Kirby Joseph in a bit late.
They did. But he played like half the game.
He did play a lot of the game, but
right,
we were seeing a lot of everybody else before he got out there.
Yeah. And Brady Breeze got hurt early, like on the opening special teams drive. And so that hurt him. But Kirby got in. I thought, here's the thing. Kirby's biggest weakness is his tackling. And he filled the hole on a run. Like it was like right at the beginning of the third quarter, they ran like a B gap to the right. And the offensive line just opened that up. And he saw it, recognized it, got in, broke down, and he made a great tackle in the open field. And then at the end of that drive, they threw a big bomb, and he had a chance to he made the stop at the goal line as well. Like if he would have just like been lackadaisical, the guy would have probably scored, but he got square in the open field, got the guy down right at the goal line again. So I thought his open field tackling was improved. And for that being his biggest weakness, that's a step in the right direction for me. Yeah, he had other problems. Yeah, he could have improved in other areas. But for me, I liked what I saw, and I liked him improving in his areas of weakness. And so I liked what Kirby ended up putting up on the field for me. And so I was pretty happy about that. I think that's anything
kicking
you want
battle
to add about safeties? Oh, all right. Kickers.
Nothing special happened with either of them. Didn't they make every kick?
Yeah.
Nobody kicked anything out of bounds. They made every kick. I don't know. I don't know who's got the edge. Patterson got to make, I guess, the more or less clutch kick late, but it was just because it was his turn.
Yeah. He kicked 27 and 28 yard field goals.
Yeah, they're nothing spectacular.
Cyber kick from 46. That was it. They made them all. They made their extra points. They did fine.
Not any closer on that run.
No. At the same time, I still think they like Seibert's power.
Yeah, this would they let him start. They let him be the guy. So
and at the scrimmage, it was very noticeable the difference between the two of them when they kicked a lot more and they were kicking like for distance and they're kicking from 62 or whatever it was. Like those you could see the difference. Like it was like a good 5 yards or more distance, like between the two of them. And so I think Seibert's got a little bit of an edge at this stage.
The kick returners, Khalil Pimpleton had the took it 5 yards deep and then came flying out of there and made it to the 25. So he it's not like he lost yardage by not taking the touchback, but he wanted to make a play, you know. So you give him a little bit of credit for that. But you know, they were able to generate some yardage on kick returns, but they never put him into, you know, where they were deep into Falcons territory when they started the offensive drive. So it, you know, nothing special there. Nothing to write home about.
Yeah, they gave so they wanted this is what we talked about earlier with Benson, right? To give him that opportunity to show he can do something. For me, I walked away thinking, okay, I'm ready to see the starters. You know, that was my impression, was I don't think
there's they got a threat.
Yeah, for sure. And next week in Indy, you're probably going to see the backups as well, but I don't think the backups are really a threat for the starters.
Yeah, no danger.
Yeah. So, you know, okay. You have anything else you want to add on special teams?
No, not at all.
Okay. I totally forgot. I'm looking at my roster chart here. I totally forgot to talk about Anthony Pittman as a linebacker. That 2 minute drill at the end of the half, he had three quarterback hits, like almost like back to back to back. And that impressed me with Pittman, because they played him at the mic, at the will, and they played him as an edge rusher in sub package there, in like the 2 minute sub package. And then in camp previously, we've seen him as a cover man, single cover linebacker, and in sub packages as well. That positional versatility plus what he does on special teams, I really think that has put him in a really good spot. And so we talked about how we see those four guys at the top. Right now, Pittman is my five, and I think he's got enough. You saw enough as an off the ball and a special teams guy to think he's in the mix. And then that what he did at the edge, from the edge in those sub package drills, I thought was impressive enough to me to say, I think he's ahead of Jared Davis on the depth chart.
All right. So that's it for the team. You already mentioned exhibition number two, or preseason game number two in Indianapolis on Saturday night. Not a long journey. If any of you listening who are in the Detroit area want to make the drive out there and go see him, I'm sure there's still tickets remaining.
They have joint practices with them as well.
Oh yeah, they play twice this week, right? Leading up to the game. Are they going to be in Indianapolis, right?
They are in Allen Park on Monday, travel day Tuesday, joint practices Wednesday and Thursday, Friday day off, Saturday game. Well, Friday's technically a walkthrough, but yeah, then Saturday game.
Hard Knocks, we got to meet the coaches basically. Yeah. Although we had met all these coaches back in the 90s and early 2000s when they were playing. Mm-hmm. If you wanted to show someone who's never watched football before and you feel like I need to stereotypically show them what football is, you'd show them that first episode of Hard Knocks. That was football. You know, the HBO put out there a very romantic vision of what, you know, pro football is. Right. It was entertaining. The next one's going to be like they picked the right team this year. That's for sure.
The Deuce Aaron Glenn stuff is just awesome. Right. It's just awesome to watch. So
and I wonder how much it helps him or hurts him, because it's just like back in that Tampa Bay year where if it was the defensive tackle Baker would be standing in the backfield shouting at the kicker while he's trying to, like, I wonder if that same type of stuff helps those guys. Like, they are being distracted on practice, and that's going to help them in the game when they're trying to, you know, make decisions. Now they'll have a clear head because they're used to being yelled at all the time by their pals. I don't know, probably not. But it was entertaining.
It is. I think it's a bit motivating for them. I think, like, the running backs.
Well, it's competitions, for sure.
Yeah, they tend to get a little bit more amped up when Deuce gets amped up. It's just I enjoyed the episode. I thought the team rallying around Hutchinson was a lot of fun to watch. I thought Rodriguez's salsa thing was a lot of fun for them. It was very a very positive look The Lions are I think going to be a team that a lot of national fans really start to gravitate towards because of Hard Knocks.
Yeah, they'll be keeping, yeah, a lot of casual fans will be keeping their eye on them this season.
Yeah.
We're probably going to learn a lot more about other players now in week two. They'll probably switch the focus a little bit away from the coaches. So that'll be interesting. And the internal battles. Yep. We had a review. It was a great one. We really appreciate it.
Jim.
Yep, Jim. He had very nice things to say. Eric, do you have anything to add before we go?
No, I think we're up to 418. I think we're at 110 on Spotify now.
Spotify, yep.
Yep. Doing well with the reviews, and hopefully they keep up. And yeah, that's it. We'll do it again.
That's all we got today. Tuesday night will be Hard Knocks. Saturday night will be more Lions football, and you'll probably hear from us by the end of the weekend. So that's it. That's all we got for this week. And until next time, let's go Lions.